The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. The long war is over, the headline said. Peace after 12 years. That's the headlines in the United States after former President Nixon announced a peace agreement had been concluded with the communist forces in Vietnam, that American troops were being brought home, and finally, that even POWs would be returned. But you know, at that time, for Americans, the president's peace announcement was a rather hollow victory, because by 1973, when that announcement was made, Vietnam had become one of the worst nightmares and tragedies in all of American history. And today, we daily are witnessing the nightmarish finish to that tragedy. A whole country being dismembered, torn apart, piece by piece. We see it on the pages now of our newspapers, even the cover stories on leading weekly news magazines. South Viet troops abandoned Hue. Reds control 11 provinces. The Reds captured Da Nang. 100,000 soldiers cut off in worst loss in 20 years. These are our headlines. And also, the latest that I got just before coming on the air is that even the evacuation of refugees by ships has had to be stopped because communist rockets have prevented some of those American ships from entering into the harbor where they could even allow people to swim to them. Well, when you look at Vietnam in retrospect, I think it's time for reflection about the policies of several U.S. administrations and going clear back, believe it or not, to the days of the end of World War II and even prior to Korea. Because Vietnam is not through inflicting an enormous amount of pain upon the United States of America. By 1973, when those unbelievable headlines, "The war is over, peace after 12 years," had been published in the United States, we had been heavily involved in that agony of Vietnam for about 12 years. And the last 6 or 7 of those years had shaken this country to its foundations and disturbed every other country on earth. When it was all over, or we thought it was over, there was no great celebration. You remember no national bell ringing, no national day of prayer and thanksgiving, no great expressions of joy at the president's announcement of a ceasefire. There wouldn't be any ticker tape parades for returning troops. There wouldn't be a hero's welcome. There might even be the case repeated thousands of times over of no job for a returning Vietnam War veteran. There wasn't any real satisfaction at some giant sacrifice or a job well done. Because, you see, Vietnam was the war that changed us deeply. It changed us mentally. It changed us morally. It changed us emotionally and spiritually. It took literally as grievous a toll on the American home front as it did on the Vietnam battlefront. It cost us 46,000 lives in combat and another 10,000, 56,000 altogether. The 10,000 from non-hostile causes, accidents, weather, and the like. And 146 plus billions of dollars over a dozen years. But the most grievous toll of all was the blow to the American spirit. There's a prophecy way back in a rather obscure part of the Bible in the book of Deuteronomy, and another in Leviticus the 26th chapter, Deuteronomy 28, parallel prophecies that talk about the final killing of the pride of the power of our people. Now, as you look up and down the length and breadth of this world of toppling governments, of unsuccessful attempts at achieving peace between Arabs and Jewish people, as in the Middle East, and the charge and countercharge are well known by us all, as you look at Latin America's aggressive new nationalism, and the most popular ideology of all around the world of anti-Americanism, as you look at this topsy-turvy world with political assassinations, King Faisal shot down by a relative, close relative at that, and we have coverage on all these events, by the way, in the current number of The Plain Truth, and then you look at the death throes and the death cries of Vietnam, and look at it in perspective, in the overview of the aftermath of American involvement there for more than 12 years under the outmoded and outdated concept of the domino theory during the Eisenhower administration. The policy of containment of communism. The idea that if one country went communist, so would all the others. I tell you, it's difficult, if not impossible, to even get a handle on the meaning of today's world news, let alone make any really safe predictions about where we go from here. But believe it or not, there is one publication that does exactly that, that gives you the overview and does tell you there is a solution coming. That's right, a solution taken out of the hands of man, that dares to really get to the heart and the core of the issues and tell you what the solutions must finally be. And that's called The Plain Truth, and the current number is waiting for you. Some of the articles, Latin America's aggressive new nationalism, Panama Canal issue flares anew, the Faisal assassination, whether or not Britain will stay in the EEC, grim Israel pushes for settlement despite massacre, the failure of Mr. Kissinger's latest shuttle diplomacy, an interview conducted with the leader of the Yad Vashem, the Jewish war memorial, or the memorial, rather, better said, to the Holocaust, rather than just war by itself. The article on World Watch, the Canal Zone, bureau reports from Brussels, Sydney, Australia, Salisbury, Rhodesia, and elsewhere. We have Art Buchwald's column, the Washington Triangle, some of the strange disappearing acts of late in Washington. And there's also the degrading dole, how we in this country put down our poor. An article on the Indian chief who ponders white man's ecology, and our economically impoverished elderly. There's a center spread article in the current number on the cancer of crime. You may have heard that crime was up about 17% in the last 4 months of 1974, about 16% for the year, when back in 1972 it was down 2%. You need to know why. Here is a chart that shows you exactly what is the percentage of criminals who repeat. It shows why crime. It shows the profile of crime, and it shows what you ought to be doing about it. The fact of our religious and other institutions being completely ineffectual in combating it or providing any deterrent to it. And there's quite an interesting article, too, from behind the scenes inside Germany about this Hitler boom that is happening right now in West Germany, of an enormous avalanche of publications, magazines, journals, and books that really are rather glamorizing the Third Reich and the Hitler era. This article in the current Plain Truth, and article 2 on the energy crisis called Fuelish Americans. That's all in the current number of The Plain Truth, and if you get your name on the mailing list right away, the next upcoming issue will have a tremendous amount of material in the backdrop of the debacle in Vietnam, but especially zeroing in on the tremendous loss of prestige, of American bargaining power, of United States leadership in the world at large, able to negotiate peace anywhere, of a growing feeling of isolationism in the American Congress, a feeling of pulling back from troubles of other peoples abroad. The Plain Truth deals with these and other issues, including the breakup of homes, our own private and personal financial problems, problems of personal health. Every single edition comes absolutely free of charge to you. There is no price. Well, Vietnam was the war that changed us in every way, morally, emotionally, and even spiritually. It cost an unprecedented amount of money, an unprecedented number of lives. When you look at Vietnam in perspective of World War II, World War I, and even Korea, there were some new records set by Vietnam. It was the longest of all of our wars. Believe it or not, we expended about twice the tonnage in bombs in Vietnam, even now tottering, capitulating before an enemy, than we did to win World War II. That is an enormous, unbelievable statistic to me. When I think of those motion pictures I saw by the dozens of hours during and in the aftermath of World War II, some of the shattered buildings that I saw myself and were still there when I went over a few years after that war and visited many countries in Europe, when I remember the many cities like Koblenz and Berlin itself, Mannheim, Essen, Wuppertal, Cologne, when I think of the attack that took so many hundreds of lives on that one day against the Schweinfurt ball-bearing factory, when the Air Force, the United States, sent over literally thousands of aircraft, when I think of all those bombing attacks by those B-17Es and B-24 Liberators, all the way through World War II, the shattering destruction that was unleashed upon Central Europe, and yet I sit here at this microphone desk and tell you that we, in those B-52 attacks on the landscape, the jungle of Vietnam, expended more than double the expenditure of American tonnages of bombs in the Vietnam War, and this is what we have bought for it. It is absolutely unreal. It just is not a believable statistic, but it's true. You know, it's no wonder there was no Armistice Day when we read those stupid headlines back in 73. Idiotic headlines, really, that the war was over. I was shouting on the broadcast at that time, as the book of Jeremiah says, they say peace, peace, when there is no peace. And wondering why we insisted on calling that stupid area the demilitarized zone. When the war was going on more fiercely than ever before, and now the final, ultimate consequences have finally come to pass. Peace never came to Vietnam, nor will it, perhaps, in our lifetime. And now the communist enemy even making a lot of pot shots at the United States attempts to evacuate refugees because they want to keep those refugees there so they can kill them. But the communists in the takeover of China and the takeover of other areas which have fallen to communism have proven to be absolutely merciless when it came to vast purges, even amounting up into the millions of terrified human beings. We can expect that Vietnam will be no different. And that, of course, is why the frenzy. That's why people are leaping overboard at the expense of their own lives. They're trying to hide aboard the wheel wells and being crushed when the gear are brought up in a big aircraft. It's why they're killing one another. It's why soldiers are abandoning their heavy equipment and turning their light weapons on their own kin and their own people in the streets of Vietnamese cities in a frenzy of pillaging and looting. Going absolutely insane, throwing down a staggering amount of equipment, warplanes, tanks, artillery, light weapons, hundreds of millions worth of American-made equipment now falling into the hands of the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese. It's unbelievable. Well, let's look at it in retrospect. Do you know that shortly after World War II, we began by supporting Ho Chi Minh? Did you know that for a time there, during the Truman administration, after World War II, and then when Ike came in, we were still supporting Ho Chi Minh? Did you know that for a time, Japanese troops were even given arms under British occupying authorities and Americans to keep the peace in that country of Vietnam? Now you have to go clear back to the ouster of the French from North Vietnam and Dien Bien Phu and learn a few lessons from that. It's too long to discuss on one program. It would take you probably a month of Sundays to come to understand the incredible history of that area. But I'm going to make a statement. I'll probably get some hate mail over. Do you know that in the long run, the United States would have been better off to have continued supporting Ho Chi Minh? Isn't that an incredible statement for me to make? I think history will finally prove that it is true. That's what we started doing. But the pragmatists who entered government back during the Truman administration and who were inherited largely by Eisenhower, who began to talk about containment, encirclement, the domino theory, who began to introduce a new kind of warfare to Americans that we had never understood and never tried to fight before when America had no legions. Now, if you're going to fight the battles of legions, you'd better have legionnaires. If you've decided to become an empire and the world's policeman, and you decide to use limited force for limited objectives in faraway countries as an extension of national or a foreign policy, then you had better have professional mercenaries who are willing to fight and to die, because that's what troops are all about. If a person wears the uniform of his country, whether for pay or whether for patriotism, he knows that a soldier is expected to fight, and if necessary, to die. That's what a professional army is all about. But the United States didn't have any legions. We just had the proverbial American young boy, who increasingly, as our involvement in Vietnam became more and more protracted and more unpopular at home, dividing the entirety of Congress, the American people, creating a generation gap, a credibility gap, sending our campuses into riot and turmoil, so that at one time in late 1960s there were more Americans facing other Americans over loaded guns than there were Americans facing the enemy on Vietnamese battlefields. We have proved in wars of the past that American soldiers can fight and fight well. If they are fighting, all stops out to win. If you want to talk about lofty idealism such as preserving democracy, that's fine, but that's not really why the troops fight when troops go to ground. It's to preserve their own lives. It's either him or me. It's maybe for mom or for girlfriend or for home and family. It's fighting to survive. It's fighting to win. It's fighting for a lot of rather obscure reasons, none of which are so lofty and idealized as to make democracy safe for the world. Not when the bullets start flying, it's not. It's fighting because if you don't kill him, he will kill you. But Americans have never been able to understand fighting as an extension of foreign policy, leaning on an enemy. By committing troops piecemeal to battle, in order to bring that enemy to a conference table. We should have learned that lesson in Korea, but we did not. Did you know that some of the bloodiest of all the battles in Korea were fought during the days of the peace talks at Panmunjom? Bloody Ridge, Bunker Hill, Pork Chop Hill, Heartbreak Ridge, those were battles playing King of the Mountain. Men committed piecemeal to battle as needed in order to win a hill, when they knew in their hearts the very next day the commanders might tell them for purely political reasons to withdraw from that hill in order to tidy up the lines and make them neat along the border with the enemy. And so in Korea we found with amazement Americans defecting to the enemy, and when they were captured even deciding not to return to their native land but to go to live in communist China. We were shocked. We couldn't believe that Americans who had been captured in battle would actually turn on their own comrades in arms, but they did. And then in Vietnam, we were further shocked. We labored through all of the agony of the Cali trial. We labored through the living room war, where we had to see the shattered bodies and the explosions and the dismembered people. We had to see murder and brutality, along with the evening meal in the television set, which is why Vietnam became known as the Living Room War. It'll probably be known in history as the war that was begun by the government and ended by the people, and the public mood moved from one of disillusionment to absolute hatred of that war. We came to loathe that war before our involvement in it was over. And in Vietnam, once again, we saw the spectacle of troops being committed piecemeal to battle, to lean on an enemy as an extension of policy. There was no front. There was no rear. There was no home front. There were no patriotic songs, no great heroes, no inspiring great war stories. Those who wore the flag were challenged by those who burnt it. The youth and the elderly fought. The long hair and the hard hat fought. The student fought the police. And it was a trial for everybody. And finally, Vietnam had revived dormant yearnings for isolation from foreign troubles and the problems of other countries. It had destroyed America's feelings that we possessed the value or political ideology that gave us some claim to rightness or righteousness to solve the world's problems. Our innocency, after all, would have been hard to justify with the almost daily pictures of long strings of bombs cascading down upon helpless civilians in the landscape of North Vietnam. From the bomb bays of B-52s, wouldn't it? Vietnam split the leaders of our nation into two polarized groups, hawks and doves. It also shattered a long tradition of bipartisan support for a president's foreign policy. Vietnam made military conscription and military establishment in general so unpopular that both parties began calling for an all-volunteer army. Vietnam drained away billions upon billions of dollars and energy from giant domestic projects and problems that were needed, and it raised consumer prices, and it raised workers' wages, since it was financed by deficit spending. And the Vietnam War is at the direct root and cause of today's incredible stagflation. The government printing press that was grinding out the tons and tons of crisp new 20s and 100s to finance the billions that were poured into the Vietnamese War, the defense industry, and all related industries that supported it, that caused runaway inflation. It's at the root cause of America's economic sickness of today was the deficit spending required to finance the Vietnam War. And economists know that. It also caused the greatest dissent in all of our history, igniting riots and demonstrations on campuses, sending draft dodgers to Canada and Sweden. It drove President Johnson from the White House. It was called Johnson's War. Mr. Nixon came in. It was called Nixon's War. He at least, although I doubt very much with people's unbelievable and incredible self-righteous misjudgment of today, will remember anything of Mr. Nixon kindly, because suddenly he has become the whipping boy for practically every evil story and joke you can imagine on the face of the earth, and nothing that was right or good or well done about his administration is even being mentioned in the media these days. So I'll mention one thing. No matter the irony of today, the troops did come home finally, and it was during the Nixon administration, and he tried to do it. And no matter the unbelievable death throes of a nation today, at least those American POWs are not being slaughtered over there as the troops advance. And Americans are not dying in Vietnam today, even though tens and hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese are, which is sick all by itself. But Vietnam also produced a counterculture in the United States that accelerated the growth of a counterculture that simply turned off on America and instead turned on to rock concerts, to drugs, to free love, to alienation, to violence. It reduced meaningful debate into a shouting match between those who wanted to wrap themselves in the flag and patriotism and those who wanted to burn it. It produced confrontation along every strain in contemporary America, between races, between classes, between generations. It divided Americans against Americans as had never happened since the Civil War, to the point the fabric of society almost tore completely apart. And some could not help but draw the analogy of the Civil War in the very worst and dark days of the latter part of the 1960s. It eroded the authority and trustability of our major institutions. Not just government and military alone, but business, universities, religion, and even science, believe it or not, became suspect. And of course now, other major institutions such as the CIA and the FBI, by their own admission, have joined the long and seemingly endless line of major institutions of U.S. government and policy that stand in ignominy, being virtually unclothed in public and embarrassed by some of the most shameful admissions, which is openly practiced by every government in the world and has been all down through history, but on our own self-righteous name-calling and blame-placing urge of today, we choose in our false claim to righteousness to decry that which is done by cloak-and-dagger U.S. agents as being obscene and immoral, and somehow fail to indict other countries who have been doing it all the way down through history. No, two wrongs do not make a right. I don't believe that. I'm talking for the moment from the point of view of government in the hands of man, and the irrationalities and the lack of proper perspective and priority in the minds of so many people. Vietnam eroded the confidence the American people had in themselves, in their leaders, and in their country. Did we really help Vietnam? Was it a peace with honor after all? The answer in today's news has got to be no. No, we maybe forestalled it. Maybe we put it off. Maybe it's going to be worse now than it would have been if we had never been involved in the first place. At least some reporters have asked government officials lately, look, we're pushing the policy of détente with the Soviet Union, right? Answer is yes. We're pushing détente with communist China, right? The answer is yes. Beginning cultural exchanges. We'd like to warm it up even more. We have seen the unbelievable spectacle of the nationalist Chinese out of the United Nations and the communist Chinese in. Why then, some of them want to know of government officials, do we not just allow the same natural attrition to occur in Southeast Asia, and then seek for détente and later entente with new regimes, exactly as we are doing in other notable parts of the world? Well, maybe that would be pondered at some later date. But as we witnessed that painful series of events, all the way down through the agony of Vietnam, where some of the names like Ben Hoa and Cameron Bay and Saigon and Da Nang and Pleiku Province and the demilitarized zone became American household words, You're tempted to say, in the backdrop of what is happening right now today, to borrow a phrase from Sir Winston Churchill's famous World War II statement, never had so many paid so much for so little. We lost more lives in Vietnam than we did in Korea, and both were big wars. You know, many American battlefield commanders, when rehearsing their troops before going into battle in Vietnam, by eyewitness accounts, have said, "I don't know why I'm here. You don't know why you're here. But since we're both here, we might as well do the best job we can and do our best to stay alive." That was about the best that you could say for the speeches that were made before they asked troops to go out to try to find an enemy that looked just like the fellow fighting along at their side. And the enemy could be anywhere in the bars of Saigon, or the rice paddies, or the streets of the villages, or they could be in the jungle, virtually impenetrable, and even able to absorb the entirety of the punishment of the bombing attacks that actually superseded, in terms of explosives expended, the entire effort of the United States during World War II. Not only then did this become our longest war in all of history, but it cost us 56,000 dead and 140 billion plus. And you have to ask today to read your headlines, what in the world do we have to show for it all? I don't know whether I can answer that question. I think maybe the collective experts of government who have been the advisors of presidents and leaders in the Pentagon should have to answer that question to the American people, but more importantly, to the Vietnamese people. I think it's time to take time out to say a prayer for a helpless people being butchered right before our startled eyes, and to wonder what in the world is going to happen next. You need to write for the current number of The Plain Truth and get all of this in perspective. Get this up-to-the-moment publication coming out twice as often with twice the impact. It's a strange world in which you live, and the only way to really keep in touch and in total feeling and grasp of all of these strange, conflicting things that are occurring around the world that don't seem to make sense is to have The Plain Truth, to get all these features, the Bureau Reports, World Watch from around the world, these articles in the current number that really concentrate a great deal on what's happening in the Middle East and in Europe. Well, let me tell you, that's what The Plain Truth is all about. It's striving to give people the overview.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.